It's 7 o'clock. This is Douglas Cameron. White flags are this morning flying over Port Stanley, and the Defence Secretary John Nott says the war in the Falklands appears to be over, bar the talking. A ceasefire is in operation. Argentine soldiers have been throwing down their weapons, and talks on the formalities of surrender are underway. In Buenos Aires, there have been angry demonstrations. The people of Argentina are stunned. Some are angry at the British. Others are accusing their own government of mishandling the whole campaign. There are demands, too, for the immediate replacement of President Galtieri. Mrs. Thatcher says the ceasefire is wonderful news. Confirmation came last night, and there was jubilation in the Commons when the Prime Minister made her announcement. From Westminster, Terry Dignan.
At 12 minutes past 10, the Prime Minister rose to make a statement to a hushed House of Commons. She described to MPs the sight that had greeted British troops when they had reached the outskirts of Port Stanley.
Large numbers of Argentine soldiers threw down their weapons. They are reported to be flying white flags over Port Stanley. Our troops have been ordered not to fire except in self-defense. Talks are now in progress between General Menendez and our Deputy Commander, Brigadier Waters, about the surrender of the Argentine forces on East and West Falklands. Yeah!
The cheers went on when Mrs. Thatcher sat down. Then the leader of the opposition, Mr. Michael Foot, rose. He thanked the Prime Minister for her statement. He said there would be genuine rejoicing now that the end of the Falklands conflict was near. There would, he said, be great congratulations to the British forces on the Falklands. And Mr. Foot had kind words, too, for Mrs. Thatcher.
I can well understand the anxieties and the pressures that must have been upon her during these weeks, and I can understand that at this moment those pressures and anxieties may be relieved, and I congratulate her upon that.
The Liberal leader, Mr. David Steele, congratulated the government, and so did Dr. David Owen for the Social Democrats. MPs from all parties were openly jubilant as they left the House of Commons. They will return today to hear a further statement by the Prime Minister. Terry Dignan, IRN, Westminster.
A short time ago, IRN's Kim Sabido, who's with the British troops, sent us his report of events in and around Port Stanley since the ceasefire was announced last night. He says the end of the fighting came suddenly.
It was as sudden and haphazard as you might expect in a place like this. Having fought bitterly for possession of the high ground around Stanley, the Argentines suddenly cracked. Hundreds, perhaps thousands, streamed back into the capital, leaving weapons and equipment strewn in their wake. And from the north, paratroops, the men who'd fought so fiercely at Goose Green and who'd lost their colonel in the process, came after them, right on to Stanley Racecourse on the outskirts of the town. There they were told to halt. It was just after 1 o'clock local time. From the hilltops, white flags could be seen in all directions, out of windows, from chimney pots, even from the ships in the harbour. The Argentines had had enough, and before long, Brigadier Julian Thompson, one of the men who'd masterminded the land invasion, was in Stanley and talking to senior officers. 4 o'clock was given as the time of the truce, but by nightfall, although everything seemed over in all but name, no agreement had been signed, and Deputy Land Forces Commander Brigadier John Waters was flown in from HMS Fearless to take control of discussions. In Stanley itself, the locals were ecstatic. Three women had been killed by a British artillery shell the night before, the only civilian casualties of the conflict. But no one blamed the British. The Argentines had, they said, placed their artillery inside the town so British guns couldn't fire on them for fear of causing just such casualties. The first person into Stanley was a British correspondent from the Evening Standard in London, Max Hastings. He travelled with the paras and had walked through the Argentine lines as a civilian, arms held high. He was welcomed by the locals. Many of them crowded into the by now famous Upland Goose Hotel. By God, said the Roman Catholic priest, Daniel Spraggan, it's good to see you. It wasn't just Max Hastings he was welcoming, it was the British forces who'd fought their way to the edge of the town so brilliantly in the preceding hours and days. many of whom, like their Argentine counterparts, had died on the way, some just hours and even minutes before the truce was declared. The landlord of the Upland Goose, Des King, told Hastings how they'd never doubted the British would come. It was just a matter of time. For several hours, the confusion about just who had surrendered and on what terms continued. Nothing had been signed, and yet Argentine officers, looking as dejected and beaten as their men, were saying the war was over, not just in Stanley, but throughout the islands. There are, of course, at least 1,000 Argentine troops on West Falkland, and nobody yet knows if the ceasefire applies to them or even if they'll observe it. One of the more disturbing aspects of the latter stages of this war is that British ships and planes have been unable to prevent the regular resupply of both Stanley and West Falkland. Whether this collapse in resistance around the Falklands capital is the final act in the war, it's not sure. But one thing is for sure. For those of us, civilians and military alike, who've experienced the depths of the last few weeks on the Falklands, the feeling now is one of enormous relief and exhilaration that at long last, this does look like the end.
Kim Sabido sent that report after the battle, but he also went into battle with his tape recorder and kept it running while he was under fire.
You hear the bullets now whizzing around us, ricocheting off the rocks. And every salvo is small arms fire, machine gun fire, coming both down the hill and then up the hill in reply from the British troops ahead of me. Somebody's been hit up a front. Everything now landing far too close for comfort. I just heard somebody up front about 20 or 30 feet has received a bullet in the leg or something.
We've just received news that Downing Street has just officially announced the Argentine forces on the West and East Falklands surrendered at 9 o'clock local time last night. Arrangements are now being made to return the soldiers to Argentina, together with their arms and equipment. Downing Street released the text of a message from the commander of the British land forces on the islands, General Jeremy Moore. It says simply, "Falkland Islands once more under the government desired by their inhabitants. God save the Queen." In Argentina, public reaction to the British victory has been swift and heated. In many key areas of Buenos Aires, thousands of people have swept out onto the streets, chanting their defiance at the ceasefire and also shouting their anger at the way the Argentine government has handled the whole affair. With this report, Antonia Higgs.
For most of the night, the angry mob that besieged the presidential palace screamed, wept and pleaded with the junta not to give in to the British. The high military command here is still insisting that all that has been discussed is a ceasefire, but these demonstrators were in no doubt that they will soon be hearing of a full surrender. They yelled anti-British slogans and struck out at any reporters that went near, and the few that reluctantly agreed to speak in the language they say they now hate insisted that whatever the junta agrees, the Argentine people still lay claim to those islands.
This is vile. Well, I don't accept it, because I think, and not only me, but you see all these people, we think that we must continue with the war.
Are people here going to be very upset if there is a surrender? Do you think there will be a lot of demonstrations like this?
Oh, yes, I think that the whole country is going to have demonstrations like this.
Maybe Puerto Argentino is going to surrender, but the war is not going to stop.
Puerto Argentino is just a battle. It's not the war. It's just a battle, not the last one.
So the war will start again?
I hope so.
President Galtieri, the other members of the junta, and most of the country's top military men have been talking through the night as Argentina waits to be told officially that its beloved Malvinas are now back under British control. Antonia Higgs, IRN, Buenos Aires.
Independent Radio News, it's 9 minutes past 7. Back in London with an assessment of the cost of a British victory in the Falklands, here's our defence correspondent, Paul Maurice.
The battle to regain the Falklands has cost Britain dearly in both lives and equipment, but almost certainly the country has lost less than Mrs. Thatcher thought it might. In all, about 250 British servicemen have died. Four major warships, the Sheffield, the Ardent, the Antelope and the Coventry, have been sunk, along with the requisitioned container ship, the Atlantic Conveyor, and her thousands of tons of valuable cargo. The worst losses were incurred during the 5 days after the landing at Port San Carlos on May the 21st, when wave after wave of Argentine fighters and bombers hit the fleet. After 17 servicemen died during the battle for Goose Green, it was thought the worst was over. But the Argentine Air Force hit the two landing ships in Bluff Cove a week ago, and 50 more British servicemen died. However, the Argentine forces have lost a lot more. In men, including the sinking of the cruiser, the General Belgrano, the Argentine must have lost almost 1,000 people. In addition, at least 100 main combat aircraft have been shot down and several patrol boats sunk. Paul Maurice, IRN, at the Ministry of Defence in Whitehall.
The British government now faces the mammoth task of deciding exactly what form the political future of the Falklands will take. Here's our diplomatic correspondent, David Spanier.
The government is now actively studying the future arrangements for the Falklands. The conclusion that Mrs. Thatcher and her advisers have come to is that the Falklands should be granted full self-government. The essential problem will be how to guarantee their defence. Given the difficulties of arranging international support, Britain will probably have to carry the burden alone, at least to start with. This means keeping a large fleet and military garrison on the islands, supported by Phantom jets. On the economic front, Lord Shackleton is already updating his recommendations to improve the fishery and agriculture of the islands. But whatever arrangements are eventually made, it will be necessary sooner or later to reach a political settlement with Argentina.
The implications of the ceasefire were discussed at a special meeting of President Reagan's top advisers. Of particular concern is the effect that the British victory will have on relations between Latin and North America. This report from Andrew Manderstam.
The U.S. National Security Council is thought to have reviewed the impact of an Argentine surrender on future relations between the United States and Latin America. The Reagan administration is keen to be involved in a long-term solution to the dispute in the hopes that this would improve its position in the region. Earlier, the American Vice President, Mr. George Bush, said that if reports of a surrender were correct, he would say hooray. A White House spokesman explained that Mr. Bush had not wished to imply support for a British victory, but was simply rejoicing at an end to the bloodshed. Andrew Mandelstam, IRN, Washington.
And just let us repeat that in the last few minutes we've heard officially from Downing Street that the Argentine forces on the West and East Falklands surrendered at 9 o'clock local time last night. Arrangements are now being made to return the men to Argentina together with their arms and equipment. Independent Radio News, it's 12 minutes past 7. In other news this morning, fighting around the Lebanese capital Beirut is dying down as the Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin prepares to fly to the United States to try to find a solution to the crisis. The United States envoy Philip Habib has been having separate talks in Lebanon with President Sarkis, but so far no clear options have emerged which would lead to a permanent ceasefire. One line, though, that's being pursued is that of a demilitarized zone in South Lebanon policed by an international peacekeeping force. With this report from Beirut, Jay Dyer.
Israeli radio quotes an Israeli army officer in Beirut as saying the fighting has died down now that Israeli forces have the Muslim sector surrounded on all sides. The radio said that Palestinian guerrillas had been surrendering to Israeli forces and that local farmers on the outskirts of the city had been handing over guerrillas hiding on their land. What are described as clearing up operations have also been going on to the south in the areas controlled by Israel, with large quantities of arms reported captured. Egypt has once again passed on a request for a ceasefire from the Palestinians in Beirut. The Israelis replied that they do not negotiate with the PLO and will cease fire when attacks on Israeli forces stop. This is Jay Dyer in Tel Aviv.
EEC fisheries ministers meet in Luxembourg today in another attempt to hammer out the common fisheries policy. British fishermen want an early agreement because they say foreign boats will be able to fish up to our beaches if the talks are still deadlocked at the end of the year. This report from Quentin McFarlane.
The EEC has been trying unsuccessfully for 8 years to agree a common fisheries policy. Today in Luxembourg, the 10 ministers will have another go, but few people in the industry are confident of agreement before the present piecemeal arrangement ends on December 31. There are two main stumbling blocks. Firstly, Britain wants an exclusive 12 miles limit, with two boxes further afield from which foreign boats would be banned. Secondly, we are pushing for a bigger share of the seven main species in EEC waters, 45% against 35 currently on offer. If there's not an agreement before the end of the year, our fishermen fear a free-for-all, putting even more of them out of business. Quentin McFarlane, IRN, Aberdeen.
Independent Radio News, Douglas Cameron reporting. The AM get you to work service, and we've got a burst water main in Lee Green in southeast London. That's partly closed Burnt Ash Road. And one or two problems on Eastern Region. Same as yesterday, damage to overhead power lines near Chelmsford, again affecting services from Chelmsford, Witham, Colchester and beyond. Services reduced and subject to delay, but special buses running between Chelmsford and Shenfield to supplement the train service. And the 8:30 from Liverpool Street to Norwich will run this morning via Cambridge. London's weather, a mainly dry start with quite a bit of sunshine to come, but just the possibility of a few showers later. The temperature right now, again on the coolish side, it's 12 centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit, and it'll go to 17 centigrade, 63 Fahrenheit. The wind is southeasterly light. Sunset this evening comes at 9:18, and the lights go on at 9:48. You're listening to the AM programme, the station is LBC, and the time is 7:15.
Now, here is a commercial for the driver of the Silver Escort travelling eastwards on the A40, or rather, crawling along towards the traffic lights by the Hoover factory. Did you know, sir, that instead of travelling bumper to bumper, you could be travelling station to station with a tube season ticket to the West End? It can save you money on normal tube fares, it lets you travel anywhere in the West End zone free, and gives you extra free travel weekends and evenings. Why am I telling you all this? Because I know what's waiting for you at White City. Get a season ticket. It's you it's there for.
What's turning the heads at Wimbledon this year?
Advantage Saab GLI. Match point Saab GLE.
See Saab's new showroom at 14 Morden Road, SW19, just opposite South Wimbledon Tube, or ring 01-542-2454.
Game, set, and match, Saab Turbo.
Saab Wimbledon, 542-2454.
Checkout 82 at today's Tesco. A 9-ounce bottle of HP Source, 29 pence. Tesco Pears, a 14.5-ounce can, 23 pence. 19.5 pence for a 1-litre bottle of New Pin washing up liquid. Big 15.5-ounce cans of Tesco beans in tomato sauce for a small 17.5 pence each. Checkout 82.
Check it out, check it out.
Hundreds of low, low prices that make today's Tesco great value any day.
Today's Tesco.
Check it out.
The time on this rather special Tuesday the 15th of June, 17 minutes past 7. A very good morning to you if you've joined us over the last few minutes. As you've gathered, there's a sensational end to the fighting in the Falklands. We'll be covering that in just a moment. And, of course, we'll be bringing in the experts and getting assessment and analysis throughout the programme this morning. But right now, let's turn to other things, shall we? Sport with Mike Porter.
England football captain Kevin Keegan is extremely doubtful for tomorrow's game against France in Bilbao, after suffering a recurrence of the back trouble that forced him out of the recent match against Wales. Trevor Brooking is also doubtful with a groin injury. Italy and Poland played out a goalless draw yesterday afternoon, while last night World Cup favourites Brazil won their opening match, beating Russia 2-1 in Seville. But as our football correspondent Steve Tung reports, Brazil went close to defeat.
Just hours after Ron Greenwood talked about European organisation matching South American individuality, the World Cup favourites almost followed the champions Argentina to defeat. After a horrible goalkeeping error gave the Russians a first-half lead in Seville, it took two vintage 20-yarders to win the game for Brazil. Baul from Moscow Spartak scored in the 33rd minute from 25 yards, a shot which slipped under the Brazilian keeper's hands. For all their pressure and possession, the favourites were reduced to long-range shooting, which was rarely on target, until Socrates, with a sidestep and a superb 20-yarder, brought them level. Then 3 minutes from time, Ada flipped the ball up and hit an unstoppable volley. Earlier on in Vigo, the much-maligned Italians made far more chances than a disappointing Poland, culminating in a double blow 8 minutes from time when Colavati's header was scraped off the line and Tardelli hit the bar. Now Peru, who played Cameroon today, hold the balance of power in that group. Steve Tung, RN Sport in Spain.
Tonight, Scotland opened their campaign against New Zealand in Malaga, with Ipswich striker Alan Brazil winning his seventh cap, being preferred to Joe Jordan, as manager Jock Steen makes four changes to the team that lost 1-0 to England at Hampden Park 2 weeks ago. England's cricketers should clinch victory over India in the first Cornhill Test at Lord's this morning. They need just 42 runs to win, with seven wickets standing. Meanwhile, Sussex strengthened their hold on second place in the Schweppes County Championship when, as we hear from David Luddy, they defeated Worcestershire.
Sussex won by an innings and 37 runs at Hove after South African paceman Garth LaRue sent Worcester reeling. He captured their first three wickets in the second innings after Sussex had taken a 190 runs lead. Imran Khan followed up with 3 for 33 and Ian Gregg and Colin Wells both took two wickets each, dismissing Worcester for 153 runs. Middlesex had seven men out for leg before wicket in their match with Yorkshire at Sheffield and go into today's play 124 runs behind as Yorkshire in their second innings have moved on to 79 for 3. And Kent were in deep trouble against champions Nottinghamshire. They've scored three runs for four wickets in their second innings, all taken by Mike Kendrick, and are still 23 runs behind at Trent Bridge, where the wicket was reported as unsatisfactory to Lords last week.
There's the usual greyhound racing this afternoon at Hackney. Jim Bailey's selection is Garford Tommy. That runs out of Trap 5 in the 3:35. And there are two race meetings this afternoon, with the first day of Royal Ascot and a meeting at Thirsk. Colin Turner's nap runs in the 3:45 at Royal Ascot. It's number 6, Ivano. And I'll run through all of Colin Turner's selections in our next sports bulletin at 7:45.
Why take the train to Aberdeen and Newcastle? Danair fly to Aberdeen and Newcastle from London Gatwick up to 28 flights a week. Check our low fares with your travel agent and take the fast way. Fly Danair.
At Lipton's, we don't just cut English cheeses, we give them away.
9 cheeses to choose from, madam.
When you buy £2 of any English county cheese, just send in the labels or till tickets, and we'll send you a voucher for your free half pound of any English county cheese.
I'd like some double Gloucester, please.
Aha!
And if your first £2 includes a half pound of double Gloucester, we'll send you vouchers for free cheese plus a half pound of Jacob's cream crackers.
One voucher, your crackers, madam.
Am I?
Lipton's. Freshness and value under one roof.
AM on LBC at 21 minutes past 7. Good morning from Bob Holness and Douglas Cameron. If you've just switched on, let me bring you up to date with the news that it's just been announced that all the Argentine forces in the Falklands have unconditionally surrendered to the commander of the British Land Forces, General Jeremy Moore. Through all the confusion of ceasefire or surrender on honourable terms, it's now emerged that the Argentine forces have accepted that they've been defeated. With us in the studio now, our defence correspondent, Paul Maurice. Well, the obvious question, Paul, what happens now?
Well, from what we hear from Downing Street, all the Argentine forces and their arms and ammunition will be sent back to the Argentine. Now, there are a number of roll-on, roll-off ferries, Sea Link, Townsend, Torreson down there, that could adequately do the job, and, of course, the Canberra. But I imagine they will keep the Canberra for other purposes, to bring the British troops back, or some of them anyway. So some of these ferries will roll up into Port Stanley Harbour. The Argentine forces and all their equipment will be trundled aboard and unceremoniously sent back to Buenos Aires. And I think that they will try and do that just as quickly as possible. They will remove every vestige of Argentine influence in the Falklands just as quickly as possible, probably within the next 2 or 3 days. Everything will be taken back and it will be reverted to the British rule. All the British institutions will be put back, and as much of the damage that's been caused down there, both by our own gunfire and by the Argentines, will be repaired. And there are large numbers of Royal Engineers who will be able to do a lot of the repair work on the island. It's been put initially at somewhere about £30 million just to repair the runway and other places like that, installations around the airport area. It's going to cost a great deal more over a much longer time. But initially, the idea is simply to remove everything that could possibly be called Argentinian and take it back to Buenos Aires.
Although the scene has got to be returned to peace and peaceful existence once again for the islanders, there will always be a reminder, won't there? Because there's got to be a garrison left on the island. Is it going to have to be a large one?
Yes, probably so. Probably a very large garrison. It had been thought that after the end of the hostilities actually on the Falklands, the Argentine might continue hostilities by coming in with bombing raids. It now looks, because of the terms of the unconditional surrender, and we don't know them at the moment, that this probably won't happen, that General Galtieri will have to accept defeat totally, and that he will have to sign a document which will prevent him from bombing the British troops on the island. But a garrison, yes, thought to be about 3,000 strong originally, initially rather, and then with some sort of RAF attachment, probably phantoms down there, and a major warship, probably two or three warships kept there for some time anyway. Eventually a thinning out of that, probably down to 1,000 troops, but some sort of military presence in terms of the Royal Air Force. They will extend the runway, probably up to 10,000 feet. So it will be capable of being reforced direct from the UK if necessary, and probably through Ascension Island anyway, so that reinforcements in other circumstances can get down there in terms of anti-aircraft missiles and such like things within 24 hours. But even so, there will be American anti-aircraft equipment installed on the airport almost immediately and throughout the area. I suspect they will also build better roads and communications initially as well. Probably the Royal Engineers will do that. And the island, if it isn't developed, if there aren't more people put down there, and again, that's been another suggestion from the government, there will be a smaller garrison than will be initially, eventually, and more presence by British troops. And we'll have to wait and see whether NATO perhaps comes in or international organisations and uses the island either as a military base or for some other purposes. But I think one thing is probably certain, that it's going to be a very, very long time before it's ever handed back to the Argentine.
And it's a bit early to make any sort of definite assessment, Paul, but is it possible to say in military terms whether the Falklands campaign has been a success?
I think in military terms it's been an experience more than a success. A lot of the weapon systems that we've used, particularly in terms of the naval systems, have shown that they have shortcomings. A lot of them also have shown that they can be very successful. A lot of them also shown that they can be adapted. Can be adapted for uses that they weren't originally invented for. The Seawolf, for instance, on the ships, on the Type 22 destroyers, has been a remarkable weapon. Although it was designed for low-flying aircraft and designed to take out missiles, it's been extremely successful in the narrow waters of the Falkland Sound, where other of the weapon systems, like the Sea Dart, just couldn't be used because their radar couldn't pick up the incoming aircraft. I think that's been a considerable success. What it has shown, particularly down there, is that our airborne early warning system, which we abandoned along with the aircraft carrier Ark Royal, has been sadly missed.
Yeah.
This could have prevented a lot of the losses. But on the other hand, I think Mrs. Thatcher turns around and Admiral Sandy Woodward and looks at exactly what the task force has achieved and the losses that we've taken, they will say, well, we thought we would have lost more. Because although it's not perhaps a very popular thing to say, the frigates and the destroyers that we lost down there were doing the job they were designed to do. They were put at risk, they were put out at front, they were put there to protect our forces, they were put there to protect the big capital ships like Invincible and the Hermes, and they did their job splendidly. There's going to be some controversy over why the Sheffield was sunk, why she was allowed to be hit by an Exocet missile without anybody seeing it. I don't think there's going to be any controversy over the Ardent, the Antelope and the Coventry. They were there. They were doing their job. It couldn't be hoped that the airplanes from Invincible and Hermes could catch up, could see all the incoming aircraft. And we heard an admission even just yesterday that they didn't see. They did very well against the planes that they saw coming in. But a lot of the strikes they just didn't see. And those are the ones that got through and did the damage. But it was only really over a relatively short period. Yes, we lost 250 servicemen. But on the other hand, we could have lost a great deal more. And I think that there will be a lot of success stories for the people that commanded the forces down there and the weapon systems themselves.
Thank you, Paul, very much indeed. Our defence correspondent, Paul Maurice, after a long 8 weeks, and indeed after a very long night indeed, now goes off to get a bit of shut-eye. Thank you for joining us. 27 minutes past seven. Well, you've possibly gathered that's the main story of the day, and a story we'll be dwelling on in its various aspects right throughout AM this morning. We'll be joined by various authorities and experts. We'll be joined by John Cheek, who, of course, is an islander, and he'll be returning home very soon. That's in the last hour. Before that, in the hour that follows this, Lord Shackleton will be coming into the studio to talk to our diplomatic correspondent, David Spanier. But life goes on, of course, and so does travel in London, and we'll be turning to that in just a moment.
If you're going to the West Country, why spend an age on the train? Bryman Airways fly twice a day from Heathrow to Plymouth in just 55 minutes for less than the ordinary first-class rail fare. £21 standby or £52 day return. There are also flights from Gatwick, and Bryman fly twice daily to Newquay and Cornwall too. Just book through your travel agent. Of course, you could read War and Peace during the age on the train, but the hour of the plane will give you more time down west. With Bryman, the independent airline that's going places fast.
How can you make your office more productive? It's a question that matters to your business. But now at last, there's an answer that separates the science fact from the science fiction. At the Office Automation Show and Conference in the Barbican Centre, you'll see only the best of what's available now. You'll hear lectures given by experts with the facts, experts with no time for pipe dreams. The Office Automation Show and Conference is open now until Thursday from 10 a.m. Just turn up, there's no need to register. It's the one show that's dedicated to making your business more efficient, so make it your business to see it.
In come the travel team now. First of all, Richard Robbins at New Scotland Yard.
Good morning. A bright and marvellous one in very many senses, but so far as the roads are concerned, it's bad, bad, bad this morning. We have a serious accident that has just occurred on the Edgware Road at the junction of the Old Marylebone Road, and that is for westbound traffic that's heading out towards the flyover and then over to towards the dizzy parts of Shepherd's Bush, etc. We also have three burst water mains, and these are causing some problems. The first one in southeast London in Lee, that's near the South Circular, Westhorn Avenue and St Mildred's Road. It's actually on the A221. To Burnt Ash Road at Upwood Road near the railway bridge, and there are lots of diversions operating in that area. Please try to avoid it. The second one in Coolston on the A23 Brighton Road, just a quarter of a mile south of Coolston South Railway Station. We had that one yesterday. Temporary traffic lights there causing some problems for London-bound traffic. And at Pinner at Uxbridge Road between Woodall Gate and St Thomas's Drive. Temporary traffic lights there. Expect heavy delays in that part of town. Also at Wandsworth Road, the junction with Lansdowne Way, we have a couple of weeks of roadworks there in association with gas repairs. This is a useful cut-through route from the South Lambeth Road to Wandsworth Road, and of course we have the everlasting gas works, or everlasting roadworks, should I say, at Richmond and Kingston town centres. Do beware of those. Finally, at Greenford and Perivale, watch out for roadworks there on the A40 Western Avenue at Biddeford Avenue. Richard Robbins, New Scotland Yard.
Good morning, this is Kelvin O'Shea of the AA. Traffic on the A12 from Chelmsford is exceedingly heavy, and this is aggravated by the problem with the trains they've been having in Essex. So on the A12 you'll experience very heavy traffic between London and Chelmsford. The London bound carriageway of the A2, the Broughton bypass at the eastern end of the M2 in Kent, is closed, and all traffic is using the coast bound side, so do take care there. Kelvin O'Shea of the AA.
Michael Meach, London Transport. Three problems for the next half an hour or so. The Circle Line from Victoria to the city and on to Baker Street will have some gaps in the service as a couple of trains are out of use. Bus routes 75 and 92 are being diverted because of that burst water main in Burnt Ash Road, and the 2B service on the buses will be short of staff all day, so slightly less regular than it ought to be. Michael Meach, London Transport.
And for air travellers at Heathrow and Gatwick, no reports of any difficulties, and there are no long delays on British Airways intercontinental arrivals this morning. Finally, some information for travel agents in the London area. Due to a technical fault, agents wishing to contact British Airways reservations by telephone should dial 370-5411 until further notice. Marie Collette at British Airways.
A couple of Eastern Region rail cancellations. Railway to Liverpool Street, the 7:53, and Shenfield to Liverpool Street, the 8:15. And for the second morning running, damage to overhead power lines near Chelmsford, affecting services from Chelmsford, Whittam, Colchester and beyond. Services are reduced and subject to delay, but special buses are running between Chelmsford and Shenfield to supplement the train service. And the 8:30 from Liverpool Street to Norwich will run this morning via Cambridge. The time is 7:32.
And now, a useful reminder from Pam Ayres.
Your dad deserves a kindly thought. It's Father's Day quite soon, so make a note to send a card for the 20th of June. He'll like that.
Don't forget that card for Father's Day. Post a little happiness and get the most from your post.
LBC News at 7:33. Downing Street has announced that Argentine armed forces in the East and West Falklands surrendered at 9 o'clock local time last night. And in a message from the commander of the land forces on the Falklands, it's been confirmed that arrangements are in hand to assemble the men to return to Argentina, together with their arms and equipment. All is quiet in the capital of the Falklands, Port Stanley, as ceasefire talks are due to get underway between British and Argentine military leaders. It's been revealed that three women civilians died when a British artillery shell hit a house. They are the only civilian casualties. As British troops made their final assault on the outskirts of Port Stanley, there were heavy Argentine losses. It's believed up to 40 British troops died in the action. Argentina's decision to accept a ceasefire could mean the end of President Galtieri's ruling military junta. The Argentine public is this morning stunned and angry at the news of the defeat. Angry crowds have been gathering outside the presidential palace in Buenos Aires, some calling out that the junta should go before a firing squad, others saying that the generals should resign and be replaced by a civilian government. In the Middle East war, the Israeli Defense Minister Ariel Sharon says the fighting in Beirut is practically over, while the Israeli leader Menachem Begin is traveling to America for talks with President Reagan. Mr. Begin says he'll discuss Israeli proposals for the creation of an international force to police a demilitarized zone in South Lebanon and keep it free of Palestinian guerrillas. Meanwhile, the Russians have demanded an immediate withdrawal of Israeli troops from Lebanon. Mrs. Leslie Brown, mother of the world's first test tube baby, has given birth to another daughter, also a test tube baby. The birth makes Mrs. Brown, who's 34, the first woman in the world to have twice given birth to a child conceived by the test tube method. The baby, Natalie Jane, was born at Bristol's maternity hospital last night, and both mum and daughter are said to be doing well. London's tube services are being cut as from next Monday. Up to 6 trains fewer will run each hour at peak times, and the Tube's operations director, Charles Cope, says it's because the number of people travelling by underground is steadily falling.
The reduced fares in October didn't produce the levels of traffic that we'd anticipated. We were right in our forecast, but we were hoping desperately that even more people would be persuaded to use public services because the fares had gone down so enormously. This just didn't happen. Now we realise that with the constraints within which we have to work, there is a need to trim the services in order to make sure that we don't exceed our spending budget for this year.
The Tube's operations director, Charles Cope, explaining why there won't be so many rush hour trains from next week. London's weather, a mainly dry start. Quite a bit of sunshine to come, but clouding over a bit later with the possibility of some showers. Rather like yesterday, I think, and the temperature about the same as well. 12 centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit now, moving to 17 centigrade, 63 Fahrenheit. The wind is southeasterly light. Sunset comes this evening at 9:18, and the lights go on at 9:48. The warmest in Britain yesterday, the Isles of Scilly, 19 centigrade, 66 Fahrenheit. The sunniest, quite a lot of it, Southport, 15 and a quarter hours. It's 7:37.
England, England, Hello, darling. Buy a sangria, a big large one, make an evening of it, take my meaning.
Oh, not a chance. I'm off to the airport and home.
Home? You'll miss Kevin and the boys.
So what? You'll miss the test match.
A load of flannel.
And Wimbledon.
That's a racket.
And the half-price clearance at the City Houndsditch.
You what?
Yeah, everything in the special bargain department is amazing value. Light sets of pans, $12.95. Duvet sets, $8.95. And woven rugs, $5.50.
Seems like good value.
And those are the marked prices before they're cutting off.
Cutting off? Stroll on.
The Houndsditch, near Liverpool Street and Aldgate stations, with parking nearby. Open Monday to Friday, 9:30 to 5:30, and Sunday, 10 till 2.
England better win, that's all.
And on this Tuesday morning, Tuesday, June the 15th, if you've just joined us, good morning to you. And we go back here on AM, as you might expect, to the South Atlantic. And although the fighting has been going on for a matter of weeks, the dispute over the sovereignty of the Falkland Islands has been rumbling on for a good deal longer than that. Paul Larsman now reports on the quarrel that became a war.
For 150 years, Argentine maps have doggedly referred to the Falkland Islands as the Malvinas, and generations of Argentine schoolchildren have been taught that the windswept territory 300 miles from their coastline is theirs. But the crisis, which has cost so many lives, estimates say at least 250 Britons and more than 1,000 Argentines have been killed, began on Monday, March the 22nd, just 12 weeks ago. 60 Argentine scrap merchants landed on South Georgia, ostensibly to salvage a derelict whaling station. Then they hoist the blue and white Argentine flag. The British government make diplomatic protests, and the only ship in the area, HMS Endurance, an icebreaker, which was to have been scrapped in the latest defence cuts, is sent into the region, with 22 Marines from Port Stanley on board. They were landed at Grytviken, their orders relayed to them by Endurance.
Grytviken, this is Endurance. I assume that you can hear me. Rules of engagement are as stated earlier this morning. Rules of engagement are as stated earlier this morning. Defend if you are provoked. Over.
Thursday, April the 1st, Britain is alerted to the imminent prospect of a full-scale Argentine invasion of the Falkland Islands and calls for an emergency meeting of the United Nations Security Council. The next day, 5,000 Argentine troops invade. Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington.
I have to confirm that an Argentine military attack on Port Stanley in the Falkland Islands has taken place, and that Port Stanley is now occupied by Argentine military forces. Her Majesty's government totally condemns this unprovoked aggression, which is in flagrant disregard of the appeal made by both the Secretary-General of the United Nations and by the President of the Security Council yesterday for both sides to refrain from the use of force and to resolve present tensions by diplomatic means.
The small British force based in Port Stanley lays down arms, but only after a fierce struggle. Falkland's governor, Rex Hunt, surrendered to the Argentine admiral.
He tried to shake me by the hand, but I said I would not shake hands with somebody who is invading British territory. He said that it was not British territory, that he had come to reclaim for the Falkland, for Argentina, what was rightfully theirs and which we, the territory that we had taken away from them in 1833. And he said that they had brought an overwhelmingly superior force to avoid casualties. He said he did not wish to inflict any casualties on the civilians or on the military. He praised the Marines for their bravery and skill, and he said that he appealed to me to save needless loss of life and damage to property in both the civilian part of the town and in and around GH and with the Marines. And I said I had no alternative but to agree. And I then ordered, gave orders to Major Norman and Major Newt to lay down arms.
Saturday, April the 3rd, the UN Security Council approves a British motion calling for the withdrawal of Argentine forces and the opening of negotiations. Argentine troops take South Georgia after overcoming stiff resistance from the tiny garrison of British Marines.
The government has now decided that a large task force will sail as soon as all preparations are complete.
Monday, April the 5th, and the task force is dispatched. There is political wrangling at home over who was to blame for not taking action earlier. Lord Carrington resigns, his successor, Francis Pym. Then came a lull on the military front. As the task force steamed towards the South Atlantic, American Secretary of State Alexander Haig starts his peace shuttle, a series of trips between Washington, Buenos Aires and London, which was eventually to prove fruitless.
In light of Argentina's failure to accept a compromise, we must take concrete steps to underscore that the United States cannot and will not condone the use of unlawful force to resolve disputes.
There were proposals and counter-proposals, times when it seemed the diplomats had found a solution. But Mrs. Thatcher made it clear that British sovereignty was not negotiable.
Argentina has, of course, long disputed British sovereignty over the islands. But we have absolutely no doubt about our sovereignty, which has been continuous since 1833. Nor have we any doubt about the unequivocal wishes of the Falkland Islanders, who are British in stock and tradition, and they wish to remain British in allegiance. We cannot allow the democratic rights of the islanders to be denied by the territorial ambitions of Argentina.
Sunday, April the 25th.
The commander of the operation has sent the following message. Be pleased to inform Her Majesty that the White Ensign flies alongside the Union Jack in South Georgia. God save the Queen.
What happens next?
Thank you very much.
What's your reaction?
Rejoice at that news and congratulate our forces and the Marines.
Are we going
good
to
night,
declare
gentlemen.
War on Argentina, Mr. Thatcher?
Rejoice.
Jubilation in Britain as news comes through that British troops have captured South Georgia and taken 190 prisoners. But now the casualties begin to increase dramatically. There are violent sea and air battles between British and Argentine forces. And on May the 2nd, the Argentine cruiser General Belgrano is attacked and sunk by a nuclear submarine. 321 people are killed. Then came the news everyone here was dreading.
HMS Sheffield, a Type 42 destroyer, was attacked and hit late this afternoon by an Argentine missile.
An Exocet missile rips into the destroyer and turns it into an inferno. 20 are killed, 24 injured. Sheffield captain Sam Salt.
I do feel very frustrated. I mean, it's an appalling way to leave a commitment without your ship, whatever the circumstances, and, you know, I would like to be down there in that ship, seeing it through. The fact that I haven't been able to and the ship was lost is a fortune of war, I think. And if you accept that, then look forwards, not backwards. And from that point of view, I'm very glad to be home.
You were quoted as saying on the way home you didn't want a hero's welcome, but surely it can't be anything else.
We're not heroes. The people who are heroes are the people who died. They're great people.
The undeclared war hots up, and back in Britain, reinforcements set sail on the QE2.
The band of the Welsh Guards plays on the quayside as the troops file onto the ship. Since first light, a stream of trucks have brought the 3,000 men of the 5th...
British planes are brought down, two go missing, but throughout the fighting, Argentine Air Force losses far exceed the British. Then comes a devastating commando raid on Pebble Island. 11 Argentine aircraft and an ammunition dump are destroyed. And less than a week later, the thrust for Stanley begins.
And it's quite a way to shore. I'm in the water. And I'm on the beach now. And we're going ashore with paratroopers heavily laden with missiles and guns. It's a very quiet night. A starlit night. And now we're ashore. a British paratroop force is back on the Falklands.